This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk here on this Wednesday, July 20th. Great to have you with us once again. Thanks for making us part of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, and happy to be here as we are working through the middle of the week and looking at a fairly mixed trade today in the grain and livestock sector. Soybeans were under pressure here today, while corn and wheat were relatively flat to mixed, with the energy market relatively quiet. Overall, just a fairly quiet day pretty much across the board here today. We're going to have a discussion about the markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He will join us coming up here in just a little bit in segment two and three as we take a look at the market trade today. Also, we were going to have a conversation with Lance Zimmerman. He is with Robo Research North America now, their senior beef analyst. He was at Cattle Facts. We're going to have that conversation with Lance coming up on tomorrow's show now. I mentioned he was going to be on today on yesterday's show, but a little bit of a scheduling conflict, and so we got things moved around. We're going to talk to Lance Zimmerman coming up tomorrow. I know we'll hit on the upcoming cattle on feed and cattle inventory report on Friday. We'll talk about beef demand and more. That is going to be coming up on tomorrow's show now. So apologies for that, but we will be talking with Lance Zimmerman tomorrow. Coming up here as well on the show, we'll take a look at some of the news headlines here in the world of agriculture on top of our discussion with Mike Zuzulo coming up here about the market trade in just a little bit. Speaking of the market trade, though, I talked with Ryan Moe of StoneX in for Arlen Suderman today around mid-session, got Ryan's thoughts on what we're seeing here in the grain trade today, as well as in the energy market. We got the weekly energy numbers out from the Department of Energy, so we touch on things there, as well as what he's seeing for price action in grains today. And we start our conversation looking at the grains and really focusing in on the soy complex as a whole as the downside leader here today.
Bean oil is the leader for the soybean complex. But then when we look at soybeans in general, and you're looking at a 24 to 25 cent move in the August soybeans, even though most folks are trading against the November now, we are seeing a 20 to 25 cent down move. But when you're talking a $13 commodity, that's not a huge move, even though it seems like a lot of money to those of us in the business that have been here for a while.
Well, and I think as well with the soybean market, I know we got an export sale announced this morning from China, a bit of a surprise, but that's really not helping out the market at all here today, Ryan.
Yeah, well, last time we talked about an export sale, the USDA walked back on that here a few days ago. So I'm not saying that the same thing is going to happen here again. But when you look at where the U.S. is positioned as far as basis is concerned versus our world competitors, once we get into September, yeah, we should be getting more of these sales, but we're not seeing them. And that is a bit concerning about soybean demand issues in China, potentially.
And looking across the board here as well, corn, beans, wheat, do you attribute the weakness we're seeing here? Is this mainly tied to the potential for some cooler temperatures in the forecast next week? Or is this more of an end user situation where we're getting some of our needs met there? I mean, what is the big driver, do you think?
Seeing some weakness in the soy processor bids across the country as they're getting their needs met. And the beans are just trickling into them still. A lot of logistical issues, and so I don't think we're going to be in a position where we're going to collapse basis at the processor level anytime soon, but it could be happening at some point in the next couple of weeks. A similar situation on the corn you know, those processors tell us if they could get logistics, they might have all of their needs met here. And so it's still an issue with the supply chain, not enough trucks and not enough trains.
And Ryan, as well, looking at the energy complex, I know we got the weekly energy reports out and looking as well here, crude oil back up above $100 a barrel. Anything you're seeing in energies we need to watch out for today?
For those of us in the ag sector, of course, we care about propane, especially as we're looking to have a little bit of a later harvest, maybe a wetter harvest. It's a little too early to tell on that. When you look at our Midwest stocks on propane, we are trending higher in a really nice seasonal fashion. We'd like to see some more stocks there for dry our gas later this fall, but we're making our way there slowly but surely. From the ethanol perspective, this morning we got that DOE report that came out. We had a production uptick, which is not really much of a surprise, but we are now seeing a three-week trend higher in demand for ethanol, which is good news. That is also showing that we've got some stocks where we really need the stocks, which is out on the West Coast, because we think we drive a lot here in the Midwest. Boy, oh boy, we got nothing on those California drivers. And so we're seeing some of the stocks leave the Midwest, which is a good thing, and get out to our coasts, which is important because that's where the big demand is for fuel.
And again, that is comments with Ryan Moe of StoneX in for Arlen Suderman here today with a look at some of our price action in the market trade on this Wednesday. Wanted to look a little closer at the Department of Energy numbers here today. We saw the DOE say ethanol production increased from 1.005 million barrels per day to 1.034 per day this last week. U.S. ethanol inventory stayed at 23.6 million barrels. We saw the DOE say crude oil inventory is down 400,000 barrels to 426.6 million barrels, and domestic production slipped from 12 million barrels per day to 11.9 million barrels per day. Still short of the pre-pandemic level of 13 million barrels per day. We have started to see gas prices come down a little bit in many areas, but still a long ways to go compared to where we were here at times, you know, really the beginning of the year before the Russia-Ukraine war started to break out. Speaking of Russian President Vladimir Putin, he warned yesterday following his summit in Iran that the Nord Stream 1 pipeline may be operating at a further reduced rate when it comes back online tomorrow. The pipeline's flows had already been dropped to only 40% of its 160 million cubic meters per day capacity prior to the 10-day maintenance, as Russia continues to try to squeeze their Western foes under the pretext of technical issues. Putin claimed yesterday that if a part that is supposedly caught up in sanctions is not returned, the pipeline will only be able to pump 30 million cubic meters per day, under 20% of its capacity. Interestingly, this comes at a time that Russia's Gazprom reported daily flows to China via their Power of Siberia pipeline reached a new all-time record earlier in the week as the two powers continue to grow closer. We're also watching for that news on that potential breakthrough in a grain corridor, an agreement between Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN and the European Union and everyone involved. But still, even with that, it's going to be a wonder of how long it would take for even a shipment to get out of there, demining the ports, etc. So a lot of things we continue to watch kind of in the background of our market trade with what's going on in the Black Sea region with Russia and Ukraine. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the market trade here today. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, he joins us next for a conversation. That's on the way after the break. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at the market trade here on this Wednesday, a fairly mixed day, we'll call it, in the market trade, kind of reminiscent of Tuesday's action. Let's say good afternoon to Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, with us. Mike, great to have you back on, sir. Hope you're having a good week.
Having a nice one. Just trying to stay cool. Hope you are too. Made a few trips to Dairy Queen this week so far, Jesse.
I'm with you there. I think I'm going to be making a few more trips as well as the week goes on. If this this heat continues for many of us, which it sounds like it will, at least into the weekend. However, I know just a little bit in that forecast, even the hint and whisper of a cooler, drier forecast, that seems to be giving us a little bit of our pressure here this week, especially in Court of Beans. I know there's some other things, but that kind of seems to be an overriding factor. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, we've had this theme between you and I that I think has been pretty accurate at this point, where you've got weather and supply out there, but it's not really being traded. And I don't think you could get a better example this week than what you're seeing in states like Kansas and Nebraska. And then you jump over the Atlantic Ocean and you see record highs and massive fires in Europe. And you're getting actual hard news out of the European crop agencies that they're looking at some pretty big drops in their crop forecasts. Romania, it was the number one exporter of corn last year. They're looking at maybe not having anything to export this year because of their drought. But this is just not getting into the marketplace. This is not getting priced in. It's almost like it's being walled off, and the market continues to face a different set of fundamentals that it continues to trade. And as I wrote in last weekend's newsletter, and I think maybe you and I touched on it last week, as I'm hopeful, I'm thinking that we're coming to the end and the conclusion of being so one-sided on the macro side and on the fundamentals that really have very little to do with crop production.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we continue on last week's discussion. I'll pull up this chart you sent over, the Bloomberg commodity chart. Walk us through this, and let's kind of wrap a bow on what we were talking about a little more last week and how that's still kind of playing into everything this week.
The apex and the heart of my short-term analysis that would, I think, direct trade going into the rest of July and into early August into the next WASD report is centered upon China and the Federal Reserve. And those two things are linked together because both of them have created this stronger dollar mindset. And that's why in the top left of this chart, I say this is where the Fed policy really counts. And what we're looking at, as you say, in blue is the Bloomberg Commodity Index. And on the red chart is the emerging market ETF, which is from Morgan Stanley. That's called EEM. That's its ticker symbol. This is a very good indicator that shows the similarities between how these two markets that seem apparently completely separate from one another, how closely associated they are with trading. And we've had a very steep decline in the emerging markets led by China, led by their COVID policy, led by their property bubble that is now bursting. And we're finding out more and more of that as time goes on this last 2 weeks. But just to give you an idea, the emerging market ETF that you're looking at in red there helps make us understand, Jesse, why we've had six straight weeks of lower emerging market currencies. Why? Because everybody's been running to the U.S. dollar and selling emerging market currencies. And that is a massive flag to investors, especially when you have the Federal Reserve looking at a major policy shift and looking at implementing yet another major interest rate hike. And that's why these two commodities tend to move together very, very well. And so the Bloomberg Commodity Index, again in blue, has gone all the way back down to its major long-term low, which corresponds with when the Federal Reserve decided to let inflation in the economy and into commodity prices. And that was back in mid to late 2020. So these charts make a lot more sense in terms of why we've had this kind of price action. This goes back to why I continue to think the wheat market needs to be the main leader to find its low first. It's fallen the most. It's got the managed money positions net short, and it's been so strictly tied to the dollar and the copper market and the emerging markets, China, copper. They're essentially all one and the same when it comes to the big investors.
Well, you mentioned the wheat market, and I'll pull up the next chart looking at U.S. and EU wheat futures. And, you know, wheat the last couple of days, Tuesday and Wednesday today, it's been kind of just, you know, deja vu, kind of seen the same trade, Mike. Chicago wheat did its best to try and pull us higher, and we saw that here today a little bit more so than yesterday. But talk a little bit more about this chart and just the action you've seen here this week in wheat so far.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to frame it, Jesse. We're marking time, it seems, by the price action. And this is in light of the fact that we still do not have an agreement of a safe shipping corridor in the Black Sea between Ukraine and Russia, even though that was expected today, and that was let go in a congressional testimony by the U.S. United Nations diplomat telling Congress that just a few hours ago. And this is in light of the fact that now we're hearing that the Russians are turning off even more gas, natural gas, to Europe, especially Germany. And they're also looking to expand their war in Ukraine, and they're looking to partition and set up banks and set up their own companies in parts of southeastern Ukraine, the heart of Ukrainian wheat belt. I read a heartbreaking story, and I won't go into too much detail, but this is kind of where we're at with Russia and Ukraine when it comes to grains. It's not just a war of attrition when it comes to military. It's a war of attrition when it comes to ground and farmland and grain that cannot be sold. Or if it's sold, it's being sold at one half or one third the price that farmers deserve. And essentially what's happening is Russia is starving the Ukrainian farmer by either making them hold grain they cannot sell because the shipping ports are not open, or they have to sell it at such a steep discount and take such a hit because of exponentially higher freight rates. And customers, farmers in Ukraine, not customers, but farmers in Ukraine are saying that they will not make it past this year if things don't open up in terms of the Black Sea port. And so this chart really shows you, and I think you hit it on the nose, we're just not doing anything in the EU milling wheat, that the key market where you would think Ukraine wheat that you couldn't get out the door would be substituted by European wheat. But European wheat, yes, it's $1.20, $1.15 higher a bushel than the United States at the mercantile exchange, but it's really not come out of its downtrend at all. And I think this is a major leading indicator as a result.
Well, and I know yesterday as well, Egypt canceled their tender. They were trying to find some different buyers out there. U.S. was the cheapest. They said, it's still too expensive. And I know I hadn't seen anything today. I know they were maybe independently looking for some wheat, but I think that plays into the global scale of things right now, Mike. And with everything being shut down on the Black Sea, who knows if we get a deal when things will open. But just looking at the globalization, everything, I know you have one more chart for the video as well, looking at UN food prices. But I just look at everything that's going on, and it really speaks to just the state of agriculture and food-based commodities across the world right now.
Yeah, this is a chart I created based upon the Global Food Price Index from the United Nations FAO, and that's the red line. And then the purple line is the Global Meat Price Index from the same agency. And we notice that the two yellow triangles that I've denoted there, that the first triangle in 2020 is once again where the Fed said they don't mind inflation and they changed their monetary policy and allowed inflation to come into the markets. Well, the second triangle up at the top right is where they've changed their mind in the last few months, right around the same time period that we saw Russia invade Ukraine, plus or minus a month or so. And what this is essentially tracking price action, Jesse, over the longer term of what I think is happening in this world right now. And that's why I put the globalization trend, the dotted green line. We had globalization go up pretty nicely from 2002 until the financial crisis in the drought year of 2012. And all of a sudden, we started to see both these food price index and the global meat price index start to really flatline, if not go lower. And by the time we got to 2014, 2015, it was outright starting to go down. And that's your deflation. That was the market telling us before we really knew it that globalization was starting to waver and really starting to weaken. Well, now with the Ukrainian-Russian war and the invasion by Russia and this new East, new West type mindset we have based upon energy and based upon commodities and fossil fuels and based upon autocracies and dictatorships versus democracies, my expectation is the globalization trend will even go down more in the next few years. And so what I'm trying to prepare clients for, and obviously the listener and the viewer here on your show, is we have to start thinking completely out of the box at this point. And what we've learned over the last 25 years, we're probably going to have to relearn all over again as far as what it's like to not be in a globalized world, a supply chain that's, you know, so tightly linked and something that we've gotten really accustomed to in my generation. And I think this is really important. Last thing I'll say about this chart is if you look at the global meat price index, it continues to go higher. And in fact, made a new high, taking out its 2014 highs, actually higher than 2008 now. That to me is very important, because if that global meat price index doesn't back down soon, I think that could actually charge up the global food price index again through livestock feeding becoming more important in terms of cost of production. We're already seeing at the feedlots here in the Plain States, we're seeing lighter dressed weights. That lighter dressed weight, lighter meat numbers means less supply. So I think at some point, we're going to have to watch very closely to see how this impacts the global food price overall.
And that is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, our guest today here on Market Talk. We'll continue our conversation coming up here after the break. Closing numbers today, September corn down 4.5, 592 and a quarter. December down 5 and a quarter, 590. August beans 28 and a quarter lower at 1449. November down 26, 1332 and a quarter. Bean meal for August up $1.50 a ton, $4.36.50. Bean oil for August down 186 points at $60.03. September Chicago wheat up 7 and a quarter, 8.19 and a half. September KC wheat up 1 and a quarter, 8.70 and a half. Spring wheat September down 5 and a half at 9.24 and a quarter. Coming up more with Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, back after this here on Market Talk.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com, and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here on this Wednesday, July 20th. Jesse Allen with you. Our guest today, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. We'll get back to Mike in just a second. We want to look at the closing livestock numbers today as well. August live cattle up 2, 135.75. October up 22, 141.32. December live cattle up 7, 146.82. August feeder cattle 92 lower, 177.82. September down 82, 180.97. October down 82 at 183.75. August hogs 205 higher, 114.87. October up 152, 96.02. December hogs up 117, 86.85. And February hogs up at 80 at 89.55. And looking at the stock market right now, the Dow Jones up 13 points, crude oil down $1.61 a barrel at 102.61. Let's get back to Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics joining us here today on Market Talk. Mike, I want to talk a little bit as well about the soy complex today. That was the downside leader. Bean oil seems to be the pressuring factor there. I'm hearing a little bit about maybe some end users getting some of their needs covered, and that might be weighing some pressure as well. Because I think about the weather side of the market, corn's in the critical time right now. Beans, yes, they're impacted, but we still have time on beans. So I wonder if it's some of these other factors weighing on the market, and all this despite a surprise sale to China this morning.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money with the timing aspect of it. In fact, I've had more clients on both sides of the Mississippi River tell me this week, Jesse, they're more worried about their bean crop than they are their corn crop at this point, and their bean stands are really, really suffering right now. But it's the timing issue, and I think it goes back to what you're talking about, the product markets. And you're right, Decatur, Illinois, I think slipped 40 or 50 cents. I think Lafayette, Indiana slipped almost 60 cents at processors today on the soybean side of the equation. I still think at the end of the day, what's going on in the soybean complex is that without vegetable oil leadership and with the meal prices now up to levels where they should be, the trade can't get over the WASDE report. They can't get over the fact that China's not buying as much beans. And we saw again in the overnight markets, the Chinese imports coming from Brazil are down again for the month of June versus June of last year. I don't see this trend changing because China's hurting right now economically. They're hurting economically because of their COVID policy. They're hurting because of this property bubble. This property bubble is huge. I think it might be the worst situation for them in real estate in probably 25 years. We have to remember Evergrande, you know, that big company had $300 billion worth of losses sitting out there. So we're talking about a massive property issue. And literally, I think across around 80 or 100 cities, People just aren't paying their mortgages because their properties aren't done yet. And so I think the Chinese government's got a lot on their plate right now. And I think that just boils down to lighter consumption, lighter demand right now, especially at these prices. So I think we got to be careful. We've fallen off. I think wheat's down about 45% from its highs in soft red. I think corn's down about 25% at this stage. And now beans after today, Wednesday's trade, is probably down about 12, 13%. We could go down a little bit more, but I think that weather comes back into play pretty quickly as we get towards the end of the month. And here again, I've been negative to beans a lot with you. I'm getting more neutral to beans. By the time we get to the Federal Reserve meeting next week, I could think that the beans would not be a negative feature to this market anymore.
Something to watch and consider there as well. Well, let's segue from beans to the pork side. You and I like to talk the pork bean trade. This pork market, the hogs, just been on fire. This cash market is on fire, jumping another $5 here from yesterday to today, it looks like. I know pork cutouts at midday were down a little bit, but front month hogs up triple digits. What is going on in this hog market right now, Mike?
Yeah, the cutout is being supported and lifted by the bellies. And I think that means we're in our BLT seasonal. We're getting tomatoes on the vine, getting ready to getting them at farmers markets, getting them into the grocery stores. We're going to start featuring bacon again. And it may not be a true seasonal, but I like to think of it as this is the time when the bellies like to make a run. And it typically ends, in my opinion, around early August. And so it's fitting up, setting up pretty nicely, fitting that criteria pretty nicely. And I think that's the heart and soul of why this hog market's been able to rally so much. It was led by, the low was kicked off by the Chinese hog market recovering, but now the U.S. hog market's really kicked into gear thanks to that cutout value and thanks to that belly price especially. So that tends to end towards the end of July, early August. I would think that same type of price pattern could be expected again this year. But the key with the hogs now, Jesse, you talked about the August hogs. We're now only $21 premium in August fat cattle compared to August hogs, going into one of the worst droughts we've seen probably in 10 years, if these weather models are correct, in feedlot country, where, you know, two-thirds of the feedlot industry is located in such a tight area of the southern plains and Texas panhandle states. And so I really feel like that August fat cattle market's got some up to it. The October fats have a gap above it. I think that's where, if the hogs keep going higher, the fat cattle can really find some support off that.
Well, and speaking as well a little more on the cattle side, Mike, you know, we saw a little bit of feedlot activity today. But, you know, overall cattle, I know a lot of folks are friendly this market. We have a cattle on feed report coming up on Friday, cattle inventory. One has to wonder if those reports coming up could maybe cause some consolidation here in cattle to round out the balance of the week.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point. I think that's where the cattle on feed report to me is the most important of the two reports. The marketing's number is going to be the most important of the three that the trade measures. We need very strong marketings because of the fact that if we're so supportive in the mindset of the price action of cattle, we need good weekly export sales Thursday. We need good marketing's numbers on Friday. That's the missing link on that chart I showed you between the food prices and the meat prices from the FAO is the demand side. We haven't seen the meat demand falter, even with the dollar and even with the inflation and even with pocketbooks, you know, shrinking because of the gas prices. So this is a global phenomenon. Protein is in still very high demand. Part of it is because supplies are tightening, and that's what these reports are really, what we want to see is, yes, supplies are tight and demand's not backing off, and therefore we need to take these prices higher to ration that demand. So the other thing I'll point out to you is the choice selects box beef spread's really a neat number right now. It's getting very wide in the choice number. That suggests, based upon some 2017 Oklahoma State analysis, that's probably some seasonal, some export demand because of the choice cuts being wanted by the Asian customers especially. But also I think it could be because we're having a tough time finding good quality market ready steers. And that makes sense if weights are down. You know, it's easier to get choice if you let cattle get fed out. But if you have a drought, you're not going to feed them as long. So that could work against us if we see the marketing slow down here on the cattle on feed report and the trade starts to think, well, we don't have enough quality cattle to meet the retail and consumer beef demand. And that choice select spread is kind of an early warning system. So something to really watch here in the next week.
Mike, we didn't touch a lot on energies. I want to circle back to that a little bit. We continue to watch crude oil, ethanol, of course. We got those numbers out for this week. Natural gas, though, taking a turn to the upside. We're kind of waiting, circling back to Russia. We're waiting to see some news there. Nord Stream 1 pipeline, I know President Putin talking about, you know, kind of capping that down for maintenance, quote unquote, more and more. But that dynamic, these energy markets, I know they're going to continue to be a big key in our commodity trade moving forward.
Yeah, natural gas is a market all by itself now. You can kind of separate it completely out, if you ask me, Jesse, exactly because of what Vladimir Putin's doing in the wheat market and what he's doing in the natural gas market. It's a war of attrition. It's a war of pain until you give him what he wants. And that's really how it's going to go for the next, you know, several months, in my humble opinion. I'm no foreign policy expert, but I don't think you need to be to see exactly where this guy's going with wanting to take over geography. And he knows how to get it done at this point when it comes to commodities. As far as the crude oil and the unleaded prices, we may have peaked in terms of prices at the retail level for unleaded gasoline, but it doesn't mean we can't go back up towards those highs. And I think that's something that I'd be watching for as we get towards the end of the month. If we could get another 5-7% pullback in unleaded gas, I would probably start to be locking in my fall needs for whatever I need to get done on the farm, both in terms of unleaded and in terms of diesel. But today's numbers friendly for ethanol, with the production number essentially jumping almost 3%. That's a good number. But I have to balance that with the fact that the product demand over the last 4 weeks on average is down about 2.6% from last year. So these high prices are getting cured by the high prices and the weaker demand. So just balance that out. But I'd be looking into the month, more weakness in unleaded and diesel, maybe getting some fall needs booked.
Fantastic as always, Mike. Any other final thoughts for us real quick before we run out of time?
No, just go to globalcommresearch.com. And if you have questions about that FAO food versus meat price index, just shoot me a note on the free trial and I'll be happy to contact you and discuss that more in detail with you one-on-one.
With that, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, always a pleasure, sir. Have a fantastic rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, Jesse. Thanks for having me, buddy.
That's Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. We'll be back with more here on Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here on this Wednesday, July 20th. Jesse Allen with you here once again. Appreciate you making us part of your day today. As we take a look at some of the latest headlines in the world of agriculture, looking at fertilizer, retail fertilizer prices continue to be mostly lower for the second week of July, according to sellers surveyed by DTN. This lower push has now been around for 7 weeks in a row. Once again, all but one of the eight major fertilizers are lower compared to last month, with only one fertilizer down considerably. DTN designates a significant move as anything 5% or more. Urea was 10% lower compared to last month. The nitrogen fertilizer had an average price of $861 per ton. DAP had an average price of $1,030 a ton. MAP at $1,052 a ton. 10340 at $904 a ton. Anhydrous at $1,449 a ton. UAN 28 at $606 a ton. And UAN 32 at $701 a ton. Now, one fertilizer was just slightly more expensive compared to last month. Potash had an average price of $885 a ton. On a price per pound of nitrogen basis, the average urea price was at 94 cents a pound, and anhydrous at 88 cents a pound. UAN 28 at $1.08 a pound, and UAN 32 at $1.09 a pound. Now, DTN recently asked the following poll question: with retail fertilizer prices falling in recent weeks, what best describes your fertilizer buying plans this summer? Choice one was, I've already purchased some of my fertilizer needs. Choice two was, I may purchase fertilizer within the next month or so. Choice three was, I may purchase fertilizer in a couple of months. And choice four was, I usually purchase fertilizer at the end of the year. Choice five was, I will not be purchasing fertilizer anytime soon. With 183 total responses, I will not be purchasing fertilizer anytime soon was the most common answer with 37% of the vote. A distant second was, I may purchase fertilizer in a couple of months at 24%. So something to think about there. We've been hearing a lot about fertilizer here this week as the U.S. International Trade Commission unanimously voted to reject anti-dumping and countervailing duties on imports of urea ammonium nitrate, or UAN, from Russia and Trinidad and Tobago. Dave Salmonson, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation, says the case before the ITC started a year ago.
This case was brought by CF Industries about a year ago in a petition to the ITC to impose duties because they said that there was dumping and unfair subsidies being placed on these fertilizer exports that was hurting their business. But the International Trade Commission, a couple of hearings, lots of evidence from both sides, decided that these duties should not be imposed.
This decision means that American farmers won't have to pay additional costs on fertilizer from those countries.
The effect of having these duties on those companies in those countries, they wouldn't export to the U.S. Those would be imposed since they couldn't sell it at a competitive price. Those companies wouldn't export to the U.S. and it would allow, of course, domestic manufacturers to have their prices higher. What this will mean going forward is at least you won't have this additional cost placed on what are already higher fertilizer prices for UAN.
And Salmonson talks about what's next for the U.S. fertilizer industry.
We should start seeing some more product come into the U.S. from Russia and Trinidad Tobago, and that should have an impact on prices. About 80% of all of our UAN imports were coming from those two countries. So we definitely, over time now, should start to see some more product move from overseas into the U.S. market now that they're not having the threat of these import duties placed on them.
And again, that's Dave Salmonson with the American Farm Bureau. Well, early indications are suggesting that land auction activity is going to be good both before and after the harvest in 2022. Farmers National Company says land sales typically slow during the spring and early summer. However, the rate of late summer and fall auctions getting scheduled with Farmers National Company is picking up rapidly. The overall number of sales and amount of land sold from now through the end of the year likely won't equal the very active land market at the end of 2021, but sales activity will more than likely exceed what was seen during the slower land market years from 2015 to 2020. FNC says people are moving ahead with sales because of the historically high land prices currently in the market. Another factor is the level of uncertainty and a number of factors that influence land values, including inflation. Sellers worry about how far and how quickly interest rates will rise as well. So that's something to continue to watch throughout the land market. Also here on Market Talk today, a shallow recession, continued high gas and diesel prices, and a request to the Environmental Protection Agency to boost biodiesel volumes next year and the year after. Those are all future moves and predictions by Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. Recession expectations by analysts and policymakers are increasing as inflation and Fed interest rate hikes slow the economy. The only question is how bad it will be for agriculture and other sectors.
Is it going to be worse if we get into a recession? I think it's going to be a shallow recession, so I don't think things are going to change much.
Grassley says high gas and diesel prices, while arguing about policies, could change that.
We have the capability of producing more and more yet than we did pre-pandemic, and this administration is putting the kibosh on that.
Though Federal Reserve and American Farm Bureau economists also blame Russia's war in Ukraine and resulting energy sanctions, further limiting global supply and raising fuel prices. Grassley has joined Minnesota Democrat Amy Klobuchar in appealing to EPA to require more biofuel use.
Klobuchar and I are sending a letter urging EPA to increase volumes of biodiesel and renewable diesel for 2023 and 2024 RVOs. Renewable volume obligations, adding more homegrown fuels to the nation's fuel supply will lower diesel prices.
The average per gallon price for diesel last week was $5.57 per gallon, down modestly from a high of $5.81 last month. Well, we are about out of time here for Market Talk today. Big thanks to Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics for joining us. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have that conversation with Lance Zimmerman with Robble Research North America, formerly of Cattle Facts. We'll talk about the beef market. Also going to be joined tomorrow by Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. So jam-packed show coming up for you again tomorrow as well. But we are out of time here on this Wednesday. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you coming up on Thursday. Have a fantastic rest of your afternoon and evening.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com. And let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.